We're here for oral argument in our first case of the day, United States of America v. Miguel Eduardo Rosario, case number 23-1242. Counsel for appellant, would you please introduce yourself and let us know how much time you request for rebuttal?
Good morning, Jason Ullman on behalf of Miguel Rosario. And could I reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, Your Honor?
Yes, that would be fine.
Thank you.
You may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. The court directed us to focus on the suppression issue and the sentencing issue. I'd like to address three points on the suppression issue and then turn to the sentencing issue. The first is let's pick up where the district court left off. Anyone who looks at this case from the outside will wonder, a warrant was signed off by a judge. Why is suppression an issue here? Well, I think this is the appropriate case where the good faith exception to the warrant requirement does not apply. These facts are extraordinary. Trooper Bailey, his track record at the time he was investigating this offense was that he was engaging in inappropriate intimate relationships with witnesses on other cases that he was investigating. That does not bode well for the constitutional rights of defendants in those cases. And then when we turn to his conduct in this particular case, there are other examples why good faith should not apply. He missed evidence at the scene when he investigated Mr. Carrillo's death on March 24th, when the family brought that evidence to him. 2 weeks later, he destroyed part of it, the cigarette pack, from which evidentiary value could have been learned by the defense team.
What
And then
does
also,
what does missing evidence have to do with it? Don't we look at the warrant itself and see whether you could rely upon what is in upon the judge's approving it? And the judge took into account his very extensive affidavit. How does missing evidence come into it?
Your Honor, I think that you're right that you engage in you're limited to the four corners of the warrant when deciding whether there's probable cause for this warrant, when deciding whether there's particularization or lack of particularization. But I think that you can look at the full trial record when analyzing good faith, whether good faith reliance. And I would note that the district court did not even hang his hat on good faith here. So the district court did not rule that there was good faith. That would excuse the exclusionary rule in this case. But when we get to the warrant itself, there are also reasons to think good faith should not apply. And that's because, I mean, looking at page two of the search warrant affidavit, Trooper Bailey explains why evidentiary value can be obtained from cell phones, but then he requests a warrant for Facebook instead. And also, when we look at page one of the warrant, this is just as broad and general as the warrant in Myers, for example, which this court affirmed. There's no indication, there's nothing on page one, the warrant itself, that would limit the discretion of the officer executing this warrant. I think that it's pretty remarkable that after our opening brief came out, other
Let me ask
circuits.
a maybe a very simple question. Excuse me. Why do you need a warrant for Facebook?
I believe that there's a personal interest in that information, and that's why a warrant for Facebook would be necessary.
I mean, what
I
about
would
the
also.
third part? What about the third party doctrine? What about, Miller and Smith? I mean, Miller, you get people's bank records. That's probably, on a scale of sensitivity, at least as sensitive as many Facebook items, or at least, on par with that, and no warrants required in that context.
I would like to two responses to that, Your Honor. The first is that what you're both addressing here is a standing issue, I think, and the government never raised this in the district court. Now, remember, we live in the world of Joseph and Dowdell. This is a Rule 12 scenario, and the government did not raise these issues in the district court. Therefore, they are waived. I think the government agrees that he has standing to challenge this
But
search.
I guess the tag along though is, since we're not necessarily in the direct angle, but we're in the good faith exception angle, if no warrant was required at all in the first place, doesn't that color a good faith analysis?
I don't think that that's actually true, Your Honor. The government is still getting warrants, for example, for TikTok information, someone's user information on TikTok. I mean, I'm looking at a warrant right now where the government had to go get a warrant for a subscriber's TikTok information. I mean, under that theory, Your Honor, the government wouldn't need a warrant to even get call detail logs from a cell phone provider. I don't think that that's correct. I think that a warrant is required to get private information of an individual from Facebook or from a third party, including cell phone providers, which the government routinely has to get warrants.
And so you may think that, but there's no Supreme Court or Third Circuit case on point, is there?
Your Honor, because the government did not raise this issue in the district court, I believe it is waived, and I did not do the research on that. I apologize, Your Honor.
No, I mean, I hear what you're saying on waive. I mean, you don't have to do research on waived issues. I guess my thought is, though, it feels strange when we do a good faith analysis, and I agree with you that we should look at more, that we need to have a bigger aperture on good faith. If the aperture gets so big, then it seems that maybe if a warrant wasn't even required, counsel is in favor of the good faith exception. Or if it's an open question.
I would like to point out that the government raised good faith in its brief in this court, and that was not part of the good faith argument in this court either. I think the government and I are on the same page that a warrant was required, Your Honor. And I think that it's remarkable that, I mean, Santiago, that 10th Circuit case that came out after we filed our opening brief, we address it in the reply brief. That is a remarkably similar scenario. The state court judge, Santiago's a 10th Circuit case, state court judge signed a warrant that did not particularize the crime, gave the police access to pretty much anything on the cell phone. And the 10th Circuit said this is not particularized and suppressed evidence that was found on the phone that wasn't even related to the reason for obtaining the search warrant, the affidavit.
Counselor, the government in their memorandum in opposition to suppression and the court below cited the four ways in which good faith may not apply. But I don't know that this fits under any of those four. Could you tell me how it fits under any of those, the Hodge factors, if you will?
Yes, Your Honor. I think that a non-particularized warrant, good faith does not apply to that scenario.
Well, it says it has to be so defective on its face. That's the fourth requirement, is so defective on its face. How is this warrant so defective on its face?
Well, if you're the investigating officer who, and let me just be clear, there's no indication in the record that the search warrant affidavit was given to anybody. So Facebook, when executing the warrant, or the officer who is doing the search, there's no indication in the record that anyone knew about page 1 and 2 of the affidavit of probable cause.
Well, the judge's order specifically said that he's relying upon that affidavit. So he certainly had it in front of him.
The judge, but the executing officers or Facebook, they are only limited to page 1, the search warrant affidavit, the search warrant appendix page 213. And if I'm an officer looking at this page, there's nothing that limits what I'm supposed to be looking for or what evidence I'm supposed to be looking for. It just says violation of death investigation. I don't know if I'm looking for guns. I don't know if I'm looking for evidence to hide a body. I don't know what the evidence is that supposedly will support this death investigation. If I am looking at page 1, there is no indication in the record that pages 2 and 3, appendix 214 or 15, were given to anybody, including the officer executing the search, looking through the Facebook material. The other point that I would like that you got into, Your Honor, is that the district court judge used Tracy, this court's precedent, to say we're going to read affidavit in paramateri with the warrant. The government, in briefing here on appeal, disclaims any reliance on Tracy. I read the government's brief as saying we don't even have to, we do not rely on Tracy. We did not incorporate the warrant appropriately, but everything that we need is on the warrant itself, appendix page 213. We're about 9.5 minutes in. If the court has any other questions on the suppression issue, I'm happy to address them. I would like to move to the sentencing issue, if I may.
Yes, please do.
I think that the narrowest, the cleanest way to analyze this problem is in two steps. The first step is that this court got it right in Aviles, the Third Circuit case from 2019, when we're analyzing the term felony drug offense in 802.44, we use a categorical approach. The government says, not so, Shuler changed the analysis. That's the Supreme Court case from 2020. I think that that's overreading Shuler because in Brown versus United States, 2024, the Supreme Court says, here's what Shuler means. A state drug offense counts as an ACCA predicate only if the state's definition of the drug in question matches the definition under federal law, citing Shuler versus United States. So there's no reason to leave or revisit this court's precedent in Aviles. We use a categorical approach when looking at 802.44.
But Counselor, I understand the government's argument to be that when it says conduct relating to narcotic drugs or drug offense, that the relating to language works some magic here. Would you address that?
Yes, Your Honor. When I go back and look at Mullooly, the structure of the statute at issue in Mullooly versus Lynch is identical to the structure of 802.44, in that relating to precedes in Mullooly versus Lynch a controlled substance, open paren, as defined in section 102 of the Controlled Substances Act, which is 21 U.S.C. 802. Here, when we're in 802.44, the same structure, relating to, and then a series of terms that are defined within the Controlled Substances Act, section 102 of the Controlled Substances Act, 21 U.S.C. 802. Those terms, 802.44, relating to narcotic drug, that's defined in 802 subparagraph 16 or 17. Marijuana, defined in 802 16 or 17. Anabolic steroids, defined in 802.41. Orifrescent or stimulant substance, 802.9. The structure of this relating to clause is identical in Mullooly as it is to 802.44 here.
So you would say, as the Second Circuit said in Thompson, that you really can't use relating to expand. When you've got a definition following it, you can't use relating to expand on that.
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
Now, I mentioned...
You're at time. Unless my colleagues have any further questions, we'll hear from you in your 3 minutes rebuttal. Judges Roth and Rendell, do you have anything further?
Nothing further.
All right.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. Okay.
Can you hear me okay, Your Honors?
Yes.
Thank you very much. May it please the court, counsel, Christian Hogsby on behalf of the United States. Addressing the first issue that the court raised in the focus order that it issued last week regarding suppression, it's the government's position that the warrant in this case was sufficiently particular for the reasons argued in our brief. In particular, because the face of that warrant was not nearly so generic as counsel suggests. Yes, it's true that the investigation was identified as a death investigation, but it was specifically identified as this death investigation. And we believe for that reason, for some of the other reasons articulated in our brief, that it was sufficiently particular and was not overbroad, as also argued by the defense. I'm sorry, Judge Rendell, are you going to ask a question?
Yeah, I am. The district court here said that the affidavit was incorporated, but it clearly wasn't. And the face of the warrant doesn't even check the box about the affidavit or indicate that pages are attached. And in Tracy, I think we were pretty clear that kind of made a difference that, you know, when you did incorporate it in that way, even though it wasn't referenced in the text, but it, the box was checked and the pages were numbered. Here, there's no box checks, no page numbers. There's no indication anybody really had that affidavit.
Yes, Your Honor, we can't change what's on the face of that warrant. I think counsel is right that we acknowledge this court's holding in Tracy, and there isn't express language of incorporation like Tracy suggests could be used, and it really could be very simple. And I think the court pointed that out in Tracy, including by attaching the affidavit. I will also just say that it's clear from the face of the warrant that the issuing judge, a judge on the Court of Common Pleas in Pennsylvania, did take into account the affidavit that was attached to the warrant's cover page. So we also only believe that Tracy gets triggered where there's this issue regarding particularity. And in this case, we maintain that concern is not here. There was a much more general warrant at issue in Tracy. This was a much more focused warrant regarding two Facebook accounts for a very time limited period of 7 months, just a few months preceding Nicholas Correa's death. And a few months afterwards, during which Miguel Rosario had changed his Facebook account to be a new account. I'd kind of like to pivot, if I could, to the good faith issue, which counsel started with and which the panel had some questions about, because we believe that the court could go directly to good faith in this case. And I say that for a number of reasons. For starters, it's clear from the face of the warrant that the affiant, Trooper Bailey, ran this warrant past a district attorney before taking it to a judge, not just a magisterial district judge, but a judge on the Court of Common Pleas in Monroe County. And those two factors alone, we believe, weigh heavily in favor of the court making a good faith finding in this case. Counsel was starting to suggest that, and in his brief mentioned a number of factors that he believes counsel against a finding of good faith. And I'm going to suggest that the court look at it a little bit differently. Number one, the information in the warrant and the affidavit was sufficient to demonstrate probable cause to conduct an investigation into the drug-related death of Nicholas Correa. But what's interesting about this warrant application is that this wasn't a warrant that was fired off within hours of Trooper Bailey initiating this investigation. This warrant was applied for approximately 3 months after Trooper Bailey became involved, which was hours after the investigation. And there are a number of factors that demonstrate the really good police work that Trooper Bailey did, and I think it's worth highlighting. For example, within about a month after Nicholas Correa's death, and let's start here, within days, Trooper Bailey had reviewed the video from Wawa in the Reading area. He had identified the cab service that brought Correa to the Wawa. He had identified the cab driver. He had identified the route that the cab took. He had determined that cab had taken Rosario to another drug user's residence, Emily Lipinski. He had interviewed, in fact, Miguel Rosario in April of 2019. And during that interview, Miguel Rosario acknowledged that he knew Correa, that he had communicated with Correa, that the two had exchanged drugs, and that he had given him drugs that night.
So I guess I'm thinking your point is that this is not the type of activity that we need to deter from a Fourth Amendment standpoint.
That's absolutely right, Judge. We believe that, you know, there's been a lot of aspersions cast on Trooper Bailey's conduct, but what hasn't been highlighted is the really excellent police work that it was reflected thoroughly in the record of Trooper Bailey's testimony at the trial, which really sort of lays it out. I think that Rosario, through counsel, would like this court to focus on very narrow issues and then conclude that Trooper Bailey had, you know, did not act in good faith. We believe the record shows exactly the opposite. So we believe that the court could resolve the suppression issue by going to the good faith. And Judge Rendell pointed out some of the factors identified in Hodge. We believe that those are adequate. If there are other specific questions that the court would like me to address regarding suppression, I'm happy to field them.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, but one of the exceptions talks about the failure to particularize the place to be searched. And so this factor was kind of created in the concept of physical places to be searched. Mm-hmm. It wasn't kind of done with electronic, you know, information architecture. Is your position that just identifying two Facebook accounts is sufficient particularity? Or is there greater particularity that needs to be done within those Facebook accounts?
Well, Your Honor, Judge Phipps, I guess I'll address it in two ways. Number one, I think that you're right to suggest that there are some differences regarding electronic spaces, if you will, as opposed to an apartment or a home or a container. And that's true for some of the reasons that are identified in a number of cases, and I think we've cited to some of them, regarding it being unclear initially where exactly within that electronic space, whether it be a Facebook account, a cell phone, a computer hard drive, or otherwise relevant evidence may be secreted or found. So I think that there are important differences there. Regarding your point on particularity, we believe, again, that the warrant was sufficiently particular. Again, we're talking about types of information within Facebook accounts that are specifically identified over a very specific and time-limited duration.
I guess my question is, you identified three things that you think saved this warrant facially. It identified two Facebook accounts. It identified the time period, and then it said, quote, this death, unquote. My question is, what if this death, you know, that's not very, very particular. My question was, would it suffice for the exception if you didn't even say this death? If you just said, we'll want to search these two Facebook accounts for this time period, would that be sufficient? Or do you need us to make a ruling on this death doing some work is particular to get to an acceptable place with particularity?
Understood, Your Honor. So for starters, I don't want to lead with my chin too much here, but I think that if we're just simply a warrant that said, hey, we want to take a look at a couple of Facebook accounts and we don't identify any sort of basis for that, I think that could potentially be problematic. Again, I want to deal with the warrant we actually have here, which we do believe that the word this is doing some significant work for a couple of reasons. Number one, it makes very clear that this what type of investigation this is. It is a death investigation. Counsel has suggested that's hopelessly vague. That would, Judge, are you going to jump in?
I mean, it's weird to me when you do an electronic search. If you do a search of a house and you say, not the garage, you know you can't look at the garage. You know, if you walk into the garage, you've trespassed beyond what the warrant says. But when you say someone's Facebook account, don't you have to kind of look at everything in the account to find out whether you should have looked at it or not? It feels a little weird to me in the sense of saying, oh, no, that's not part of the warrant. Or is there some indicia that you get beforehand, much like the physical separation that comes from a house and a garage? So the people doing this could say, aha, we shouldn't look at this part of the account. Or do you have to look at it all and say, no, the only stuff that really matters is the stuff regarding this death? So I guess I'm just looking at the functionality of it. How exactly do you go about searching? It struck me, I don't know the answer to this, that you kind of have to search it all, and then you get to find out what you thought was relevant. Do I have that wrong?
No, I think you're dead right, Judge Phipps. And again, part of that is because of the nature of what's being searched, as you're suggesting. I mean, this really isn't the kind of situation where you can say the house and the curtilage, but not the garage. But there were specific and particularized categories of information that the warrant authorized law enforcement to seize from those specified accounts over that specified period. So it's a cabined amount of information. The defense suggests it's almost unbounded, but we would suggest it's not. And I will say this, the courts the cases that have been identified in our briefs show that there is some difficulty that courts have encountered in trying to determine the parameters of particularity. In the modern context of social media accounts like Facebook. Again, in this case, we agree with you that within that cabined amount of information that was being solicited from Facebook, the officers are limited, obviously, to what they receive. So, and in this case, it was Trooper Bailey who executed this warrant.
But if you're looking at these conversation or these Facebook accounts, and it has to do with the sale of drugs,
yes, Your Honor.
How do you know, based on the face of the warrant, that is what we're talking about? It says this death investigation. Do we know that it's a death investigation because someone died as a result of a drug deal?
So again, going back to the use of the word this, I think it's very clear from the entirety of the warrant paperwork that Trooper Bailey was writing this warrant, both the face of it and the affidavit, as if they're in one document. It may be that Trooper Bailey was unfamiliar with this court's decision in Tracy, but I think that the fact that he identifies it as this death investigation is doing work there because it's referring to what he's describing later. And he describes that in sufficient detail, actually quite a bit of detail, regarding what he encountered, what he did afterwards. The fact that he had seen drug talk in that Facebook account between these two individuals in the months leading up to the death, and the fact that Mr. Rosario had changed Facebook accounts after the death. So the warrant itself, the face of the warrant plainly is written to incorporate by use of that word this, which is more fully fleshed out in the affidavit that was attached to it.
So I know that our focus letter also asked you to get to sentencing, but I'd just like to give you a little airtime on the question that Judge Roth prompted, which is, was a warrant ever needed? And I think the question that can come your way is a little bit more pointed in the sense of, you never challenged the need for a warrant and you didn't raise it at the good faith as part of the good faith analysis either. It doesn't mean that you might give that away later, but at least for purposes of this case, you aren't arguing that that there was no need for a warrant, are you?
We're not making that argument, Judge Phipps. I think counsel is correct that in many cases we do pursue Facebook records and similar type records through the use of a search warrant. I don't think that it's too far of a reach to say that we all agree that there's a lot of information on phones as well as accounts, depending on how those accounts are set up, that are private. So we did act on a warrant here, and we commonly do. I understand, I think, what Judge Roth was getting at in that question about whether it would be always necessary or perhaps just necessary in this case to have obtained a warrant. Again, we acted on the understanding that a warrant for this kind of information, including personal messages, was required. But I confess that I have not thoroughly examined that issue. And I think Your Honor mentioned that, the Supreme Court appears not to have weighed in on whether that would necessarily be required in all instances. We just didn't challenge it in this case, Your Honor. Well, could I pivot to sentencing?
Yeah, you're at time, so I think, how about take a minute on sentencing very briefly, unless my colleagues have questions. Yeah,
if I could, Your Honor, I would appreciate that. Just to, at least in within 1 minute's time, try to identify what the government argument is and a suggestion to the court going forward, depending on what this panel ultimately concludes. As a top line issue, Your Honors, the government maintains its point of view that the district court got it right here. That following Shuler and this court decision in Portanova, the language focusing on conduct counseled in favor of and countenanced the use of a looser categorical approach, focusing on conduct, and that the court concluded that prior convictions, which it did not appear were contested, for heroin trafficking and cocaine trafficking, fell within that statutory language.
Well, but in Porta Nova, though, the language of convictions relating to possession of child pornography, and that's a very broad swath, relating to child possession. Here we have relating to narcotic drugs, which is a defined term. How can relating to expand what the meaning of narcotic drugs is?
At least one initial response comes to mind, Your Honor. Just focusing on Porta Nova, which we do recognize occurs in a different criminal setting. The term child pornography is defined federally, so it is capable of a definition. That same statute, 2252 B, also speaks to other types of conduct relating to other child sex offenses, which also find definitions federally. So,
but it didn't say relating to child pornography. It said relating to possession of child pornography. Things having to do with relating to possession is, you know, could relate to possession if it has to do with distribution or something else. So I don't want to argue with you, but I see it as just different.
I certainly didn't mean to seem as though I was arguing with you, Your Honor. I just was trying to offer, you know, I think the district court had a good grounding for its determination that a looser categorical approach was applicable in this case. What I did want to say before Judge Phipps cuts me off is that if the court were to disagree, I just want to offer a couple of suggestions. Number one, this is an issue that's percolating before this court right now in other cases. I believe there's a case called Jackson that's pending that also came out of our district.
Right.
Now, that involved New Jersey's drug schedules and definitions. I believe in that appeal, the court has solicited supplemental briefing. There's also a case that is pending out of the Western District, and I just want to make sure I get the name of it right, Your Honors. I believe it's Gamble. And one of the reasons I wanted to point that out is these cases involve more robust records on the issue that Mr. Ullman is arguing about, which is whether the strict categorical approach applies, which in Aviles, this court says typically is applied. We would suggest that if the court does conclude that the strict categorical approach apply, we believe that the offenses in this case would categorically qualify, but we would ask the court not reach that conclusion against the government in this case based upon the record that has been developed. We would suggest that if the court does ultimately conclude that a strict categorical approach applies, and again, we are arguing that it shouldn't, but if this court does conclude that, we would ask that the case be sent back to the district court so that that process could be followed in this case. We would just ask that the court not reach the conclusion that the categorical approach applies and that there's not a categorical match here. And the last thing I'll say, Judge Phipps, before I know you're going to cut me off, is that in Gamble, for example, and in other cases, the government has aided the courts by submitting declarations of chemists regarding the nature of the substances that are being described statutorily. And that's important here because these are very technical terms. And I think the court would benefit from having a more robust record developed on those issues. Thank you. For all those reasons, we ask that the district court's judgment be affirmed.
You did not urge that the modified categorical approach should apply, did you? You
did. We did not discuss the modified categorical approach, Judge Rendell, no.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Ullman, how about we add a minute to your time? How about 4 minutes for rebuttal? Give you a little bonus time as well.
Thank you. That's very kind of you, Judge Phipps. I'm going to just pick up where the government left off about asking for a remand in which they could put more evidence into the record on sentencing. That's what it sounded like to me is the request. I strongly encourage the court not to do that. I mean, there's precedent on your side in ruling that the record is closed, Dickler, for example. But more importantly, there's express waiver by the government in this district court record. Appendix pages 898 to 899. And we mentioned it in Rosario's opening brief, page 61. The government explicitly says we're not offering scientific evidence by way of an affidavit or expert or anything because we're running with this pony. We're running with this elusive category.
But wouldn't that be for the district court to decide whether it wants to hear more evidence, whether it can? I mean, if we say categorical approach applies here and the court didn't, we send it back and it's up to the district court to decide what it wants to do.
I would respectfully disagree, Your Honor, for the reasons that I just said, that the government was on notice based on Mr. Rosario's 851 objection, appendix pages 823 to 826.
But neither of you on appeal has urged this. Your opposing counsel just raised this for the first time, and you're addressing it, which is all well and good. But it wasn't before us that, oh, and by the way, you need to cut this off. I think it'd be for the district court to decide, but whatever.
I respectfully understand, Your Honor. We did raise that as one of the issues in sentencing, that he demanded an 851C1 production of proof beyond a reasonable doubt, and the government at sentencing argued for waived argument or waived producing evidence on this issue.
Okay.
And unless there are any other questions, I just want to go briefly to the search warrant issue. Rosario's interview with Trooper Bailey in April 2019, I think you all realize that that is not in the search warrant affidavit itself. And I think that's because to understand the context of that interview, Rosario was on parole. He got called into the parole office where Trooper Bailey was, and Trooper Bailey interviewed him. Trooper Bailey didn't know if this case would end up in state court or in federal court. And the Pennsylvania state constitution provides broader protection to criminal defendants than the federal constitution. I think Bailey realized that this interview of Rosario might be constitutionally suspect in state court. And if that gets thrown out, then the rest of the warrant might get thrown out too. So I do think that you need to think about that context if you are thinking about this April 29th interview at all. But the quoted conversation...
Do we know, just a question, do we know, when it's a search of a home, if this were a search of a home, you'd know Trooper Bailey went there with the warrant. Do we know exactly how this warrant was served, if you will?
No, Your Honor, no. There are no facts from the government in the suppression record about that. I can kind of glean from Trooper Bailey's trial testimony that he got on the law enforcement page of Facebook and selected what categories of items he wanted preserved and saved. But I don't even know if that's accurate. I don't know, because there was not facts proffered by the government about how that search was conducted or how that seizure was conducted. And there was no hearing on this issue. I have nothing else for the court, but I'm happy to address any questions or yield back the balance of my time.
I have nothing. Do my colleagues have anything?
I have nothing. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Take this matter under advisement.
Thank you.
Take care.